This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today we had an episode full of cops.
That's right.
It was kind of like, we should leave on the bad boy music today, I think.
That's not a bad idea. I was thinking NYPD Blue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who was that? The redhead fellow.
David Caruso.
Yeah. Ginger, say what? Caruso. Yeah, it's
David Caruso, tough guy, kind of an inexplicably tough guy, right?
Have you ever met a redhead who's not tough, though?
That's actually true.
Can you think of a redhead who's not tough? I
can't. Yeah, that's totally true. And even if they don't present as tough,
they'll still beat the hell out of you.
When the going gets tough. They get going, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, come to think of it, NYPD Blue, though, you know, David Caruso was the tough guy that you didn't necessarily know was tough. And then there was Sipowicz, who was also...
NYPD Blue?
Yeah, Sipowicz as well. Kind of a tough guy who definitely didn't present as tough.
Yeah.
Serpico was a movie, no. There was a random group in NYPD Blue.
Yeah.
A show from 1994.
Yeah.
But we digress.
This is more the bad boys, I would say, of property management.
Yeah, and these guys aren't necessarily property managers, but this is an interesting company, right? These guys are all ex-RCMP or ex-police.
Right.
Drug beat. They worked the drug beat for years, and now they're working the tenant beat. They're doing stakeouts. They're doing inspections. They're doing move outs.
I'm super excited to have come across these guys, because here's one thing: so many horror stories about people not being able to let's frame this a little bit differently. Most tenants are fantastic. I've been a tenant. You've been a tenant. There's great tenants out there.
Yeah.
But every once in a while...
We've both been tenants and landlords, and not a lot of bad experiences.
No, exactly. But every once in a while, you hear about someone who has made a career almost out of career, like of squatting, right?
Jim has a story about that.
Yeah, there's lots of stories in this episode about that. So it's kind of nice to know that guys like Jim that really understand the system know how to effectively... evict people if they are actually people that are essentially they need to be breaking the rules.
Yeah. And the nice thing is if you're a landlord, a guy like Jim is worth his weight in gold, right? Because he's got, you know, whatever, 25, 30 years as an RCMP diffusing tense situations.
Right.
All that training goes into helping you diffuse your situation. So
yeah,
great company.
He's also a landlord himself.
Yeah, yeah,
and has been for years.
Right. So this is – no, this is – there's a wealth of experience here. Really interesting conversation with Jim. So stay tuned for that,
right,
for sure. But what else do we got, Adam, before we cut to our talk with Jim? A few things. We got the stats.
Yeah, the stats just came out. So I don't know if you want to go first. You were kind of looking at the board stats and some percentages. I've got some breakdowns in terms of the sales ratios. So why don't you maybe start us
well,
off?
Well, I mean, yeah, not a lot to say here except that August was busy. So, I mean, in putting this in a broader context, right, and we've done this a few times on the show, January and February, basically a year ago today is when the market started picking up, right? August 2019 was when we kind of went from a down market to sort of shifting into a busier time again. And January and February were really heating up. And ever since May, June, July, we're getting busier and busier and busier. August, we are almost 37% up from last August in terms of sales. We're almost 20% up in terms of the 10-year average. So this August was busy in relation to last August, but also in relation to all Augusts. And in a lot of ways, this makes sense from my perspective because we basically missed the spring.
We did. Right?
So people are looking at this summer and thinking, okay, the spring was lost. It's a good time to buy, good time to list. The market feels much more stable now,
right,
than it did before.
Interest rates are still low.
Yeah, incredibly low. And we're seeing positive kind of month-over-month activity. So it makes sense that August, which is historically a very slow month, this is one of the sleepiest months of the year, was quite a bit busier than normal for sure. One thing to note, and this is a final thing I'll say, is listings are up as well. So sales are up, listings are up, which again makes sense in terms of the spring being missed. But also when we look at pricing in Greater Vancouver, we're up from last August. This makes a lot of sense because last August was basically that last month before we came out of that minor downturn. Single family in Greater Vancouver up 6.6% over the last year. So we've had a healthy last half of 2019 and first half of 2020. Townhomes up 4.4%, apartments up 4.5%. Overall, I think these stats are pretty positive. Nothing insane,
right,
but positive for sure. And I know we've been busy.
I'll highlight a couple things. And just to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, Matt. So like one of the things that I had this conversation with a client the other day, but typically, August is a slow time in the market, right? We see these kind of two humps in the market, the spring market, the fall market. And August is often when people are focused on holidays or getting kids back to school. But I feel like these typical trends or historical trends in the market, you almost have to throw them out the window right now with COVID, right? Because this year hasn't made sense. People found themselves at home in a time when they'd typically be busy at work. You know, people have taken time off. People can't travel. They can't book vacations. So it's like nothing really makes sense this year.
No, and a lot of the predictions, like I remember talking to somebody about an Airbnb on the island,
right
when COVID hit, and they had something under contract and it was like this good deal and they were really excited and they pulled the plug. And at that time it made sense. I was just on the island. Airbnb has exploded because you can't travel out.
Interprovincial travel.
Within the province,
within
right?
The province, like, yeah.
People are not leaving BC, but there's all sorts of things that seemed like logical decisions earlier this year that have turned out to be, you know, in hindsight. Hindsight's always 2020,
we predicted it.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'll mention is and this is totally anecdotal, but I think a lot of people, especially agents that are speaking to their clients, there's this kind of get stuff done kind of mentality out there right now. Like people want to just get on with it, right? They feel like they've been railroaded in their life and they just want to get back to getting things done. And a lot, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, but a lot of people got used to their space over COVID and now they're saying, I need more space, right?
Exactly.
I want a yard move the market.
I'd say that's a huge driving force of this market.
Exactly.
For sure.
Couple things I want to highlight. So quickly, downtown condos was a balanced market at 16%, but still seeing a seller's market up to about $1 million. So still a very, very active market between about 400,000 and $1 million in downtown. Westside was a seller's market, 23% overall. It was busy, really up to about the $1 million mark as well. Two areas on fire on the west side, 56% sales ratio in Fairview Slopes, which is means basically over one out of two homes are selling,
yeah.
Right? 5 out of 10 homes are selling. I can keep going up there. 10 out of 20 homes are selling.
50 out of 100 homes, I
yeah,
would say.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it would be 56. But here's another one. Kits, 59% sales ratio in Kitsilano for condos and townhomes this past month. Kits is on fire.
Kits is on fire. We've had we just had a listing in Kits that...
It exploded.
Busy.
Started on fire.
Busy. Literally.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a super busy open house, and then we had multiple offers. So, yeah, Kits is where everybody wants to be. I got to say, I have, like, over the years, I've had a bit of a love-hate relationship with Kitsilano, but there's so little to hate, especially
the other
live
night
in Vancouver longer.
Went to the patio at the Nook.
Yes. Italian restaurant.
Oh, my God.
Really?
Oh.
Good time?
Speaking of falling back in love with Kits.
Oh, Kits is great.
The long trek back to East Van didn't make much sense after that night.
East Side Condos, 28% seller's market. Now, you're going to be happy to hear this, Matt. Grandview Woodlands, 82% sales ratio for condos. Mount Pleasant, 57%, almost 60%. So in other words, if you have a condo in Mount Pleasant or Grandview Woodlands and you're thinking of selling, you're in a very, very strong position as a seller. And last but not least, let's just cover the detached. We got two markets to cover, East Van and the West Side. Starting with the West Side, 16% sales ratio. Don't let that number fool you, though, because when we look at the West Side, there's obviously a lot of really high price point stuff where there's a lot of product that's sitting. The high-end stuff is still relatively slow, relatively soft. But look at this. It's a seller's market all the way up to $3.5 million.
Yeah.
And an active seller's market. So if you're thinking
Put some numbers behind that.
Well, if you're thinking about you're going to the West Side, this is what I will say. If you're thinking about going to the West Side and getting a deal like for something around the $2.5 million or whatever, it's going to be competitive for sure, especially if it's a good product. And the East Side was 24% sales ratio. So still a seller's market right across the board on the East Side, but really it was up to 2.25 million where we see really, really strong seller's markets. And here's an example of that. If you look at the 1.5 to 1.75 million price band on the East Side, we're looking at a 45% sales ratio.
Yeah.
So basically, 5 out of 10 homes, almost
50 out of 100.
Yeah, are selling.
500 out of 1,000.
Very, very aggressive seller's market. This is, it's good news if you're a seller in East Van in that price band. And that makes sense because a lot of people, two incomes, a little bit of equity or some gifted money getting into that market, that seems to be where they end up landing.
And
right?
You know what? East Van homes were down a year or two ago. They're up 10%
right.
in the last year, since last August, up 10%. That's a busy market. Hastings Sunrise especially seems
wow.
to be...
Everything's getting absorbed.
Yeah.
It's the new park at Pandora.
Oh, my God. Those tennis courts.
Yeah. Actually...
Don't even
tell anyone no. about those tennis courts. Keep them a secret.
Saw a very very famous realtor there.
Adam Scalina?
No. You were there.
I was there.
She was playing pickleball.
Oh, yeah.
She'll be left unnamed.
Left unnamed, but she's a strong pickleballer. Is that
8 in the morning pickleballer? Yeah, that was.
I didn't recognize her till I saw her in a flurry of text messages.
Yeah, have to leave halfway through a match.
Yeah, exactly.
Living the dream.
Anyways, what else do we got, Matt? Before we cut to our interview with Jim,
we got one more thing. We are sponsored this week by Oakland Realty.
We are.
That is our brokerage, best brokerage in town. no doubt about it. Head over to Oakwin.com if you want to learn more. Oakwin.com/join. Type in VRP2020. That's Oakwin.com/join. VRP2020. There's a huge incentive for
huge incentive,
this.
Yeah. And if you are a new agent, a seasoned agent, somebody looking to make a change, Oakwin is a great fit. Best support, best resources out there, and just a great overall brokerage.
You know what I'd say? Iron sharpens iron, Adam.
Yes.
And that's what Oakwin's all about.
Yeah, exactly. Also, that's what Game of Thrones is about, I think. I don't know. There's probably swords.
Last but not least, before we cut to our talk with Jim, Adam, we got the hottest club in town.
We do. Yeah, it is the Sellers Club. It's a best club. It's a lot of bangers. I think I saw DJ Khaled there. It is a great club.
The velvet rope is out. The lineup is long. It's still exclusive, but we got room for you.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want to sign up for the Sellers Club, it's the best resources in town for sellers looking to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time for their property. We're actually putting out a new resource, Volume 2.
Volume 2 is coming. That's
yes.
right.
And Matt, maybe a bit of a spoiler alert, but it's Let more from the angle of if your home did not sell.
So your home has not sold.
Yes.
What's next?
Volume 2 is going to be absolutely great. Make sure you're on that list. And how do you do that, Matt?
Well, there's a few ways you can do that. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and sign up there. Send an email in the subject line, write Sellers Club, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Or the easiest way is literally sign up for the live wire. You're going to get the stats went out basically, before the real estate board put out the stats, that's how quickly we're putting out stats. We're also putting out stats the real estate board doesn't put out on the live wire, but we have a link. You just hit that link and hit send. You're in the Sellers Club. Every volume is directly to your inbox. You won't be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed. But without further ado, Matt, let's cut to our interview with Jim Garnett, president of CTI Services.
Enjoy.
Okay, so we're here with Jim Garnett, president of Canadian Tenant Inspections Services. How are you doing, Jim?
Doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jim, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Jim, we understand you have a long history as a police officer, which we're going to mind our P's and Q's today here. But can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I arrived in British Columbia in 1974 with the RCMP, and I worked with them for just short of 26 years here. And then I spent another 15 years at the Transit Police, all of that to train for what I'm doing today.
And can you tell us a little bit about what you guys do over at CTI Services?
Sure. Our primary business is conducting inspections of rental properties on behalf of landlords and property managers. And the end goal is to help landlords protect their assets. And we do that by doing these inspections, keeping residents safe and secure while we're doing it, making sure that there's no health and safety issues with them. And that's our approach.
So after 12 years of working with tenants, do you miss the drug dealers?
No, it's a different, totally different culture. It does cross over from time to time, but no, I don't miss the drug dealers.
Sometimes in Yale Town, I'm sure it crosses over occasionally. can you talk a little bit about maybe the services that CTI offers?
Sure. So, as I said, our primary focus is on doing the inspections. We also will serve documents for landlords. We will participate in arbitrations with RTB. So we're involved in evidence gathering and that sort of thing. And we'll do interviews if necessary. And our end goal is to highlight lease compliance issues for the landlord, so that we want to make sure that the tenants are abiding by their lease. And at the same time, our inspections validate the owner's insurance. And a lot of landlords don't understand their insurance policies, in that most insurance companies require landlords to conduct a certain number of inspections through the year. And a lot of landlords have no idea that that's even in their policies. We talk to landlords on a regular basis, and it's interesting how many go back and look after or call their companies to find out that that's one of the requirements. And interestingly enough, when you have a claim on your insurance, the insurance companies are looking to make sure you as a landlord are doing your due diligence. And if you're not conducting inspections as per your policy, then ultimately you're not doing your due diligence.
So, and yeah, that's a useful thing to point out. I feel like most people don't realize that you should be, yeah, there's a number of times you have to be inspecting the property each year. As I understand it, Jim, you guys aren't property managers though.
Absolutely not. You know, and that's often we get mistaken for property managers, and it's not our goal to be property managers. Property managers have their own processes and functions, and we have a different set of processes and functions.
So it's kind of an interesting business. Can you talk a little bit about how you got into the real estate industry?
Well, I first began as a landlord in the mid-80s, and I was working with a fellow who was interested in investment real estate, and spent some time with him, and as a result of numerous conversations, I ventured out and invested in a revenue property, and after that made several other investments in revenue properties, and I kind of developed a little bit as a landlord during that time. Then approximately 12 years ago, I was managing some properties for the estate of a friend of mine who had passed away. And I had conversation with a property manager who was one of his tenants. And this property manager was looking for someone to conduct inspections of the rental units that she had under her portfolio. So that's how I became involved in the business. It was just kind of stuck my foot in the water to see what was going on with that type of job function. And I realized when I started doing it that basically I'd been training for 40 years to do this, because a lot of the skill sets that I had as a policeman carried over into what I do now, because the you know, you're just dealing with the Residential Tenancy Act as opposed to a Liquor Act or Motor Vehicle Act or whatever. So it became a natural fit, and that's when we decided to expand the business a little bit and take on other clients. We made the decision that we were only going to use retired policemen to do the job, because they already had the skill sets necessary. It was just a matter of them being able to wrap their head around the Residential Tenancy Act.
Can we maybe unpack that a bit, Jim? Can you talk about some of the skills that that obviously police officers bring to the table for managing tenants, or for
sure.
Screening tenants, I should say?
Yeah, things like observing and reporting, observing what might be suspicious activity, conducting interviews, serving documents, giving evidence. And we do that at arbitrations in BC or tribunals in Ontario. Neutralizing volatile situations. So we quite often will get called by landlords who, for whatever reason, are at odds with their tenants, and in some cases might be afraid of their tenants. So we will go in and help them to supervise what we call stress move-outs, where both parties are at odds with one another, and we become the calming influence at the move-out, so that everything happens smoothly for both parties. So those are the types of things we do. And the lens that we're looking through is a little different than the average person's lens, because what you or your neighbor might look at and say, this looks okay to me. One of our people might go in and look at it and go, oh, this is obviously gang-related activity. There's criminal activity going on here, that sort of thing. We pick up on those nuances as we do our inspections. And, you know, it might be because of clothing. It might be because of just whatever paraphernalia we might observe while we're there that would lead us to believe that.
So do people usually, like, do landlords often bring you in when things get complicated then? Or is it like, what's the typical process? Are you involved at the beginning or is it usually when things get hairy?
Well, we work with a lot of proactive landlords who want to stay ahead of the curve, so they will hire us to do their inspections on a regular basis. And so we become familiar with the tenants, we become familiar with the property itself, and we're able to note any time that there are changes that have taken place over a period of time sort of thing that might negatively impact the landlord. So those situations are one classification, and then the other classification, of course, are people that landlords who find themselves going underwater because of what they're dealing with their tenants. And so as a last gasp, they'll phone us and say, can you give us a hand with this? And so we will become involved at that point, and we'll help them to sort out whatever the issues are. And we can take them to a certain point. We can help them through arbitrations and that sort of thing. When it gets to a level that is beyond where we should be, then we'll recommend that they get counsel. And we've become quite familiar with some residential tenancy lawyers who are very helpful to landlords. So we're able to refer them.
So being a landlord yourself, Jim, and spending the last 12 years running CTI services, what in your mind makes a good tenant, and what are some of the biggest myths out there for people when they're looking for tenants?
One of the biggest myths I've found is if they can afford to pay this much, they're probably going to be a good tenant.
Right.
Okay. That has nothing to do with it.
You know? Can make a lot of money in crime.
Exactly. And you know what? If they're paying that much more for rent, it's because the property is that much more valuable. And, you know, the landlord has to really be on their toes to make sure that it's being looked after. But in terms of what makes a good tenant, everyone is different. And there are people who are, you walk into a house and they're the tenants there, and they treat it like it's their own. And it's everything is neat and tidy and well looked after and everything else. And then you walk into some and, you know, it's like the place has been vandalized, and you go, what's happened here? You know, and so everyone is different, and everybody attaches a different level of responsibility to being a tenant and how they look after things. And ideally for a landlord, the landlord would like to, if they had to walk in and show the place to somebody on short notice, at least expect that it was going to look somewhat presentable. And that doesn't happen in some cases. And a lot of that comes from the fact that maybe the landlord isn't paying closely enough attention to what's going on at their property. So, and these are big investments. And for a landlord, when you make a real estate investment, especially in the Lower Mainland here or basically anywhere in BC, it's going to be an expensive investment. And just like you would want to look after watching your stock portfolio to make sure that everything is going well with it, and you know, being ahead of the curve if something starts to go awry with one of your investments, the same is with real estate. And I think people have to go into it as a business, and whether it's one property or 100 properties, it's important that it be looked after properly.
Jim, when you say look after the property, is the key here in your mind to, you know, to have a tenant right off the hop, you know, vet the tenant, make sure that they're a great tenant, or is the key the ongoing relationship, the monthly or quarterly inspections? Like, what is there a certain feature or features that lead to success?
I think it's all of that. I think that when tenants are vetted, when they put in an application to rent a property, it's important that the landlord do their due diligence on the front end to make sure that at least from everything that's available to them, they can determine whether or not they should be getting a good tenant or not. And there are different domains that are open to you. And one that I point people to quite often is called the Court Services Online. And that's a all of the records that will happen in civil court will appear on Court Services Online, and it's by name. You can go on there and make a query, and you can see whether or not this person has been involved in any civil processes along the way. And that could be motor vehicle accidents. It could be that they were sued in small claims court for something. Or what I specifically look for is I look for enforcement legislated entries, because that indicates that they probably had a writ of possession issued by Supreme Court for their eviction out of a property.
Wow. That's a fantastic tip.
It is, and I can give you an example.
Please.
There's a woman who lives in Richmond, has four children. She has had, in the last 5 years, 15 writs of possession issued in Supreme Court.
Wow.
So it's essentially, as near as I can tell, she's not paid rent in about 5 years. And she just looks for unsuspecting landlords. And a lot of these are landlords who are looking after their own properties. She targets them, so she catches them about the middle of the month. And they're desperate at that point, because if they've got a mortgage they're supporting, they're looking to have somebody in there paying that mortgage for them. And in she goes, and her process has been the same just every time. She bounces the deposit check, the security deposit check, and the first month rent check. And it takes them 3 to 4 months to get them out of there, and it takes a writ of possession to do that. So this is a situation that has repeated itself over and over. And I would suspect that she's getting dangerously close to having established a pattern of criminal behavior, and likely will get charged one day. But that's the type of situation that if any of these landlords had gone to the Court Services Online site, they would see all of these entries and they would run away.
Right. It's funny. We work with a lot of landlords, helping them purchase investment properties. And over the years, we've heard a lot of stories that resemble that, where people, it's almost like they've devoted their life to that process of going in, not paying rent, and then they have a place to stay for 3 or 4 months, and then eventually they get evicted. But it is a long and drawn out process for the landlord.
It is, what we've found is that if the landlord does all of their paperwork properly up front, then the process gets shortened significantly. And in British Columbia, just as an example, if you don't pay your rent on the first of the month, on the second of the month, the landlord can give you a 10-day notice. That 10-day notice gives you 5 days to pay your rent or 5 days to move. That starts a process. And then you can, through a direct request process, shorten the 6 to 8 week normal process of getting to an arbitration and get it down to a week to 10 days. All of that can happen, but it can only happen if all of the paperwork is in order. And too often I've seen tenancy agreements that were not signed by one party or the other, or pertinent information was left out of it that should have been included. And as a result of that, you apply for a direct request and the tenancy branch will come back and say, well, everything's not quite in order here. I think you need to go to an arbitration. So it gets pushed 6 to 8 weeks down the road. Then it takes after your arbitration, it's going to take you another anywhere from 3 to 30 days to get your decision back. If it's an order of possession and you're going to be serving that on the tenant, that usually gives them 2 days to move out. And if they don't do that, then you're in the lineup to get a bailiff in place through a writ of possession. So it does become a long and arduous process. But there are things that landlords can do to make sure that if necessary, they can short circuit that a little bit.
And Jim, we know you're not a property manager, and that's not the goal of the business. But do you consult on these types of things, or what do you suggest that people get a property manager, a good qualified property manager, or how do you suggest they make sure that they're, you know, all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted?
Well, I guess just the same as they would with their financial portfolio, if they were going to get a money manager to help them to look after some of their investments and things, having a property manager to look after their real estate investments is probably not a bad idea if they're not going to pay specific attention to it. And, you know, I mean, let's face it, if there are professions where you're so busy in your profession that maybe, you know, you've invested in some real estate investments and you just don't have the time to be looking at them to see what's going on. And, you know, a lot of people would be better served if they would take the time to get a qualified property manager to look after it. And, you know, all property managers are not the same either. So, you know, you're better to maybe talk to friends or people that have dealt with companies and, you know, don't be afraid to ask for references, you know, from some of the clientele. And people can always give you an opinion as to how they feel this company works or doesn't work or whatever. And that's not a bad thing. I just wanted to point out, just go back to the CSO thing just for a second, the Court Services Online. There's one other thing that is evolving as we speak, and it's becoming a very, very useful tool for landlords to use to vet tenants, and that's Landlord Credit Bureau. And Landlord Credit Bureau is expanding. They're North America-wide, and they gather information from landlords about tenant payment behaviors, and that information goes into a database that's accessible to their membership coast to coast. So it doesn't matter if you're a bad tenant in Halifax, Toronto, or Vancouver, wherever you go that you're looking to rent a place, if your record is really bad, then it's going to show up if you're a member and you're looking at the Landlord Credit Bureau to get some direction.
You know, Jim, we always you hear this a lot in the province that the Residential Tenancy Act highly favors the tenant. Do you think that's a true statement, or do you think it's just maybe, you know, poor paperwork or people not really knowing the ins and outs of the act?
Well, you know what? It's the Tenancy Act in BC is not bad. We also work in Alberta and Ontario. And, you know, if when you start looking at different things, I know Ontario are making changes to their act, and some of the things that they're adopting are coming from British Columbia. And they're doing that to improve the services for both landlords and tenants. And I find that overall, it's not a bad system. And the Residential Tenancy Branch go out of their way to give people the right information. They don't make any recommendations or anything else or point you in a specific direction, but they will give you all the information that you need in order to make the right decision. And I think that's very useful for landlords. I don't find that they're significantly worse than anybody else or significantly better than everybody else. They're well-placed, I think, and I think they've done a lot of research as to how they can be of service to both landlords and tenants, and they strive to do that.
Jim, you've mentioned one kind of horror story, the woman with four kids in Richmond who's kind of a serial abuser of properties. Do you have some other horror stories that have taken place in Vancouver that you've dealt with?
I have many.
We got all day.
You know, there are always horror stories going on, and you know, and that's because of a number of factors, and just one that we've recently dealt with, and this has evolved over 12 years. There are two kinds of people that would live in a house: a tenant, and that would be somebody that would be named under the residential tenancy agreement with the landlord, or an occupant, and an occupant is someone who's not named under the tenancy agreement, someone who has no written or verbal agreement with the landlord, maybe a friend or whatever of the tenant that is living there. And what we have found is that when tenants move, they don't always take everyone with them. So sometimes these people get left behind, and some would call them occupants. Others might call them squatters, but they're not paying rent. They're living there and they're not following any kind of guidelines under the act. So it becomes the landlord's problem to get them out. And one specific situation that comes to mind is a woman who was living on an acreage. Her common-law had moved out and left her behind to pay the rent with a couple of kids. And so she brought a friend in to live in the basement. There was no suite down there, but she provided her with a room. That friend then moved her boyfriend in. And that friend then helped her to put a guy into a shop that was on the property and as a tenant. And then this friend brought in a couple of horses. The friend had a dog. The friend had several exotic animals in cages.
Sounds like Matt's place.
Some birds and that sort of thing. Then the tenant and the occupant were at odds with one another, so the tenant gave notice that she was moving out. And so she moved, and she didn't take the occupant with her. So the process essentially is that if she doesn't have any rights or responsibilities under the act, then perhaps she's trespassing, perhaps what she's doing is mischief, perhaps she's unlawfully in a dwelling, but certainly she's not a tenant. And so in this particular case, we had interaction with the RCMP. We were at odds as to what the actual right thing to do in this case was. And it resulted in a couple of things happening. First, we went to the residential tenancy branch and we asked for an arbitration, because what we needed to have happen is we need the arbitrator to say, yes, she's an occupant. She has no rights or responsibilities under the act. She shouldn't be there. And the second thing that happened was that the RCMP went to their legal counsel and got an opinion on it. And the legal counsel came back and said, she's an occupant under the Tenancy Act. She has no rights and responsibilities under the act. So she shouldn't be there. That is something that oftentimes happens. Police forces generally, and I can speak from experience on this, are too quick to say, oh, that's a civil matter. That should go to the tenancy branch. And the tenancy branch will look and say, doesn't fall under the act. You should talk to the police about this.
Right.
So what we have been able to do over time is we've been able to garner all this information and put it in one spot. And so now we have the opinions from both sides in an RCMP file that we can refer people to when the time comes. And so when we're dealing with a police force now, and we've test driven it a couple of times, we've sent them to this file and had them take a read on it. And the response coming back was totally different than perhaps the initial reception that we had. So those things only happen with time, and it takes a long time to get everything in the right place. But with that particular instance, I think we're there. And we can help people deal with those types of situations. The other thing that we run into quite often is hoarders. And basically 2% of the population, if you do the stat check on it, are hoarders. And so whether you're in a building of 100 people or 100 units or 500 units, 100 units you can count on at least two hoarders, 500 you can count on 10 hoarders. And that's just what the statistics are, and we found that that bears out time and time again.
Wow. And what do you do? Like, so say you're doing your monthly or quarterly checks, and there's a hoarder in the property. Like, what does that look like?
Well, It's not pretty. No,
I can tell you. And I'm sorry. I mean, like, what does the process look like? Describe a hoarder's house.
Each one looks different.
Sorry, I was just having you on there. I knew where you were going. But what you can do as a landlord is the first thing you can do is you can give them notice to clean up. And if they're in a multi-unit building, your first concern should be for the well-being of everyone else in the building. Because certainly their behaviors, as hoarders gather things, and they all gather different things because they're all triggered by whatever the mental health issue is that they're having. And hoarding is a mental health issue. You have to be tiptoeing around it a little bit and helping to point them in the right direction. We've been in situations where we've called mental health workers and asked them to come in. Police forces now have mental health cars on the road. So if you call the police and have them come and take a look at it, the initial response officer can call the mental health car and have them come and take a look. And so the mental health cars have basically a mental health nurse and a police officer in the vehicle. So they're able to help people get connected with the kind of resources that they need to maybe help them with the mental health side of their issue. So we get help to get those processes in place and get them headed in the right direction. When that doesn't become an effective solution to the problem, then we start looking at other things because, again, you have to be thinking about everybody else in the building and how this person's behavior could adversely affect them, whether it be by fire, by rodents, by infestations of flies or whatever it might be. And you have to be a little concerned about what's happening with everybody else in the building. And you don't want to lose 20 good tenants because you have a hoarder living in your building that's causing big problems. So after we've helped to identify the problem and to help, and to try to help with something on the remedial side of things, if we find that the things that we're doing are not working, you know, and that might also include the fire department, bringing them in to do an assessment as to fire load and that sort of thing, then we'll take steps to have them removed. And we do that by initiating a process through the residential tenancy branch and obviously having an arbitration and presenting whatever the evidence is.
What about like belligerent people, violent people? Do you guys, have you had any kind of really hairy situations where you've had to use your
baton?
No, I'm just kidding.
It's now verbal judo because I left my baton and my pepper spray behind. I mean, everyone's different. And, you know, you run into people. I've gone to an initial inspection at places where the response was totally negative. It was like I was infringing on their rights by being there and that I shouldn't be there. And that was none of anybody's business what they were doing in the place. By the second or third visit, you know, you get to know them a little bit. You have a little conversation with them and things settle down quite nicely. I've been in some situations where that kind of belligerence and everything else sometimes has underlying problems that are associated with it. And, you know, in a lot of cases, it could be a mental health issue. You know, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose those things, but I can eliminate a whole lot of other things that I can tell you that it isn't. You know, sometimes if it's a mental health issue, there's not much that myself as an inspector can do about it. You know, if their demeanor and behavior is something that spills out into the neighborhood, maybe in a multi-unit building into other units, starts affecting other people, or in a neighborhood where it's maybe a single family house where it's affecting neighbors in the neighborhood, then perhaps there's a remedy under the residential tenancy branch to help move that person along and get them into a place where perhaps they're more comfortable.
Maybe one other question just about kind of flagging potential concerns at a tenanted property. But, You know, I'm thinking about grow ops, Jim, and also, you know, the potential of meth labs. Like, are there any indicators that, you know, when you're doing inspections, like, is there a way to kind of discern, or have you come across a lot of you know, drug manufacturing in your time?
It's interesting. And in this career, no. In my other career, I spent 20 years in drug section. I saw a lot of it. In this career, it's been interesting because we encourage our landlords and property managers on the front end, when they're vetting prospective tenants, to tell them who we are.
Wow.
And so, you know what? We have our inspections done by CTI Services. They're all a bunch of retired policemen. They could tell them that we're drug squad or we're gang task force or whatever they want. But it sends a message to the people that if they're going to be doing things that might be frowned upon in the legal community because of their activity, that maybe they shouldn't be taking this place. Maybe they should find somebody that's not quite so conscientious.
That's great.
Right. That's a useful upfront thing to tell potential tenants, especially if you're concerned.
Yeah, we've had property managers tell us that you know, everything right up to that point, they had to have this place. They're already planning where they're going to put the furniture and everything else, and they're ready to move in mentally until they get told that. And then all of a sudden, well, it's between this place and one down the street, and we just got to decide which one we're going to take, and then they never hear from them again. So,
wow, your services are worth it right there. I would imagine.
Well, they just duck a big problem when that happens, and that's a good thing.
So Jim, after 12 years of inspecting revenue properties, what is one piece of advice that you would give landlords or potential landlords?
Do your due diligence ongoing. Like, treat it as an investment. You bought a piece of revenue property, look after it like the investment it is. You wouldn't just hand somebody the keys to your Ferrari the first day you met them and say, here, take her for a spin and, come back in a couple hours and see how you like it. It's an expensive vehicle. You wouldn't do that. A piece of real estate isn't a very expensive investment. Don't do that with that either. Don't give somebody a set of keys and say, oh yeah, I'll take your 12 post-dated checks and see you in a year. You need to do some due diligence along the way. And either you or a friend, a relative, or maybe CTI Services, come in and do an inspection 3-4 times a year and see what's going on in your unit and make sure your investment's being looked after. And I think that's one of the biggest downfalls that people have. They're too quick to hand the keys off and say, this is great, we're going to make all kinds of money, and this is just a good thing. And they don't do that extra little bit of due diligence they need to do to protect that investment and make it grow.
Last, Jim, sounds like you've been in the investment property arena since the 80s. Should kind of everyday people, in your mind, everyday people with busy lives, other jobs, families, should they become landlords if they're thinking about it?
I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it's a good thing. I had a busy life, and I was certainly, my life in years gone by was not 9 to 5. And it wasn't always, being in town sort of thing. But, I did do my due diligence, and I did my ongoing due diligence to make sure that I had good tenants and that they were looking after the property. And I think that, as an investor, there are different tools available to you, and property management is one of them, where if you don't have the time to look after it, find a good property manager, somebody that you can work with. And, it's no different than finding a good accountant, finding a good banker, finding a good lawyer to deal with. Those are all key people in your team of people that you want to have. And a good property manager is just another member of that team. And I think it's really important that if you don't have the time to look after it or the desire, you make that investment in a property manager to say, please look after this for me. And there are a lot of people that grow portfolios by doing that and just add to it as time goes on. And that's a good thing for them to do. If they're not going to do that, and they're not going to look after, and they don't really care, then maybe they should be in a different investment that they don't have to pay quite that attention to.
Great advice.
So Jim, we do have this segment called the Five Wire, five quick final questions. Can you stick around for that?
Sure.
Okay, so question number one, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
Where I live, White Rock.
Favorite bar or restaurant?
Cosmos Greek restaurant, Marine Drive, White Rock, or the Ocean Park pub.
Nice. One book you would recommend that our listeners read?
Actually, there's a couple, and I'm just trying to think of the gentleman's name. He was with Bank of Montreal, and he wrote a book about real estate, and I can't remember his name right offhand. The Magic of Thinking Big is a great book to read. Helps put people's head in the right space to make investments, to grow in the business community at large, even.
That's a good one.
Good.
We'll link to that. We'll find that Bank of Montreal book, and we'll link to it in the show notes here.
Don Campbell.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
Okay. Right.
And there's a fellow, Don Campbell created an investment group that has, I think, literally thousands of members in it now across Canada. And they help investors who, a lot of them are busy investors and busy in other parts of their lives to make those real estate purchases and to manage them and stuff. So, that's the other thing that people can do is they can get around people who understand the business and learn a bunch about it. And, obviously the more you learn in any field, the more comfortable you're going to be in it. So
great. One piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
My 18-year-old self?
Yeah.
A life in policing may not give you everything you want in life.
But you'll have good stories.
Good stories. You'll be able to spot stories. The bad guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I've given that advice to my children, and they've gone in different directions in their lives, and they're being very successful at it. So.
Good. And last but not least, something that you've purchased for under $1,000 that's changed your life.
Wow.
I said quick questions. I kind of – it was a little misleading.
Yeah, it has to, probably any one of a number of books that I might have read.
Great.
Well, thanks so much, Jim, for taking the time to speak with us today. There's a lot of thought-provoking stuff and stuff to chew on there for sure. How can people find out more about what you guys are doing over at CTI Services?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.ctiservices.ca, and through that they can contact us. There's an inquiries email on there. They can call me direct, 778-840-7611 or 778-846-9125.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Jim. And very interesting conversation about Canadian Tenant Inspection Services, and appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great day.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with former police Jim Garnett, who's now the president and CEO of CTI Services.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Jim. And I got to say, we talked about this a little bit before we went on air, but really firefighters and cops, entrepreneurial spirit is alive.
That's right. I mean, you look at a guy like Jim, built up a real estate portfolio while he was still on the force. Working the drug beat, and then came up with this great idea. And I genuinely think there is, there's a need in this space for people who know how to handle situations that are sometimes tense. And there's nobody better than the police to do that, or former police with that training and experience. Interesting business, and great conversation with Jim Garnett.
Yeah, Matt, I really enjoyed having Jim on the program. And, I think that would be a fun company to work for as well. Like, if you look at Jim's website,
interesting for
there's
sure.
There's a few guys in there that look like they've maybe It looks like one that they
they've seen some stuff.
Well, yeah. There's a few guys on the. I wouldn't go in there acting tough like I do at our brokerage.
yeah, that's right.
How I go around threatening people at our brokerage. I'm not threatening people there.
Nobody. Your elbows aren't up at CTI Services when you walk down the hall.
Exactly. Yeah, my invisible lat syndrome disappears very quickly at CTI.
Pretty quick around Jim Garnett, that's exactly. For sure. But yeah, great conversation there. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We got a few things.
What?
First and foremost, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yes.
That is our website. We have a ton of resources over there. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for the live wire. This is our weekly mailer. Deal of the month. Stats before anyone else. Stats that you don't get from the real estate board. All the resources, you're going to be kept up to date on what we're doing at the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. We also have the Sellers Club there. This is the easiest way to sign up for the most exclusive, hottest club in town.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about COVID at the Sellers Club.
No lineups,
for sure.
No lineup. Distancing. It's all no just to your inbox. And here's the thing about the Sellers. Just to recap, the Sellers Club is really just the best resources to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time for your property. And we have fantastic actionable plans that we're sending out. And volume two is coming. So
volume two is coming. Get on this list. And let's be clear, we're headed into the long weekend. The fall market is here. It is upon us. If you are thinking of selling this fall and you are not on this list yet, you're not too late, but you're not too early either. I would say get on it.
Yeah. Like winter ASAP. Is coming.
That's right.
That's my second Game of Thrones reference.
Yeah,
podcast.
I'm rewatching. Oh, is that right? Okay. Yeah. Well, and last but not least, on our website, we also have the ever popular and ever useful private client services.
Because, Matt, if you were not using PCS, you were standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information at your fingertips. It is the best way to search for real estate in Vancouver. And we know we got a bunch of power walkers out there. But if you want to join the power walking club, which I got to say is not quite as exclusive as the Sellers Club. A lot more neon though. Anyways, it's a great place to be as well. So sign up for PCS.
At the VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. If you want to talk about that, walking powerfully, pickleball,
walking powerfully,
anything else real estate related, give me a call, 778-847-2854, or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or if you want to talk about walking threateningly, try adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com or 778.
It's a powerful walk.
866-4574. Or if you want to talk about not walking at all, we got that secret line.
info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
I think that's the elliptical line. That's called gracefully floating.
Have a good long weekend, guys, and we'll be back next week.
Take care. If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon for the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he'll save your soul. You gotta keep the devil down in the hole. 2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today. Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland?
Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.